assistant professor in the Department of Pediatrics in Albert Einstein College of Medicine. And I'm a trained psychologist, clinical psychologist by training. And I found myself in research, which was very interesting, but it's a story for another time. And I got so involved in forming community alliances, both nationally and internationally, that I kind of made that more of my work. So I've been working in India, and I've been now recently more working in Kenya. And the reason and the places that I find myself is usually who I'm sitting next to. And you kind of talk about it. Oh, you're interested in this work? I'm doing this work. Come on, talk to me about it. And that's how you build alliances and you build partnerships and you kind of go on. For me, I've been lucky that I work in an institution where there's people from all over the world. New York, you know, the hub of everything. So I get to meet a lot of people who are working internationally and who are very interested in forming partnership, both academic and community partnerships, to do the work. So I've been working with NGOs and different CBOs in the Bronx, in New York City, and also in India, all over India in all different states, and now in Kenya. So I'm very fortunate, and in Bangladesh. So it's kind of just keeps growing. And it's not as if like I really kind of go looking out for it. It just so happens that people, when you start talking, you start forming those collaborations. And we went from the whole corporate thing, from country thing, corporate thing, to community level. And what I'm going to talk about is more of a community project that kind of came across from community needs, and the community defined it. And that's the story that I'm going to share with all of you today. And it's called the Kasarani OBC Program Evaluation. And that's the logo that the kids came up with that they loved. It's more orange and red and yellow, and it looks much pretty. So I'm going to talk about that. Okay. Do you want to move? All right. Of course, I have no financial relationship to disclose. So orphan and vulnerable children are disproportionately affected by HIV/AIDS, as you all know, and that's what we define as OVCs. And so OVCs, HIV, are the kids that either are infected with HIV themselves or they have a parent who is infected or affected by HIV/AIDS. So that's the definition of it. And according to, we landed up in Kenya because we have a collaborator right here, Jill Rothman, who's been working in Kenya for the last 13 years through her foundation as well as an academic partner. She was working with a community organization there who's really doing a lot of work with OVCs in the country. And I was interested in it, and I landed up there with a small grant just to kind of form partnerships and kind of really meet people. And when I found myself in Kenya, I fell in love with people, fell in love with the country, and I just thought like I really, really had to work with this group right here, and that's how the story started. So we went to meet with the OVC Secretariat. We found out that in Kenya, they have at least 2.4 million orphans under the age of 18 at present, and this is a very rough estimate. This is not an accurate estimate. They have very limited resources, and not many of the kids are able to access those resources and not able to get to them, or are even aware of what is available through the government or through the NGOs because of the isolated conditions that they live in. So that's kind of important to remember in terms of what they have access to and what they are able to do with it. Now, we are working in the Kasarani division of the Nairobi province. So it's a little outside of the main city, and which consists of 31 slum settlements. And there's a population of about 800,000. It's one of the most economically impoverished areas in Nairobi. Now, results from the 2008-2009 Kenya Demographic and Health Service show that over 40% of Kasarani population is youth under the age of 18. So out of those 800,000 people, there are about 40% that are under the age of 18. And who have an early onset of sexual activity. They have childbearing at a young age and have the highest incidence of HIV in the country, almost to about 14%. And youth in Kasarani face a number of health risks. They have a lack of reproductive health information. There's female genital mutilation, even now, and early and unprotected sex, early forced marriages, STIs and HIV/AIDS, pretty high, and substance abuse, sexual abuse, and high rates of mental health problems. Now, we worked with our community partner, as I said, and Jill Ruffin was very instrumental in putting that together. That's one of the things that I've noticed. In international collaboration, there's only one person that really has to nurture the partnership and that really has to build the trust in order for people to work together. So in that's a process that takes time. And I think Jill had spent so much time building that trust with the community and with the organizations that when I went in as a partner with Jill, I was very welcomed just because they already had that relationship going. Now, St. Francis is a community hospital which currently serves over 2,000 OVCs in Kathrani. And with funding from PEPFAR, it offers a dozen programs for OVCs that address 9 core services that are divided into 2 levels, the essential services that include the nutrition, healthcare, and shelter, and also the augmented services, which are more psychosocial support, which I never really have understood what it really means by that. It sounds more like social support rather than psychosocial, but they call it psychosocial. And HIV risk reduction programs, they have certain programs. They have child protection, they have education, and economic empowerment. And that's the first place where I saw the community health workers and the community workers all get a little piece of land and they all work and grow vegetables on it. And then they come once a week to work on it. They give like 2 to 4 hours every week to work on it. And then they have all these vegetables that they share. And also they have chickens, they get like 2 chickens to start with, and then they take them home and then start working. So it's just this little economic program that they have for the community members, which is again, like $10 can go a long way in that community, which is so incredible to see as to how well they work out. So I've already talked about a little bit about how we set up the partnership because it was already existing and we kind of started to work with them and really formed that partnership. Now, I'm not going to talk a lot about the CBPR principles because I think Ruth just talked a lot about them, so how they are equal partners and they decide what they want to do. I don't decide. So they tell me, okay, we need these kind of programs, but how do we do that? So my expertise as a psychologist, as a researcher comes in because I know how to design the programs and I know how to evaluate their efficacy. So I come up with that. And they come up with their expertise as the community members as to what they know, what they need, and how they need. I can't tell them that this program will be done this way. I can only tell them that what can be different ways to be done, and they decide how it's acceptable to them culturally and socially. So we started to kind of put together a little global health pilot program in terms of really assessing the needs for OVCs as to what are their needs for mental health programs and what are their needs for HIV prevention programs, because those two seem to be the things that really came out. So we started with a need assessment and we kind of did some focus groups. We did about 5 focus groups and we had in those focus groups, we had community health workers, caregivers, and those caregivers were not necessarily all parents. There were some grandparents of OVCs and some family members who were taking care of the kids because there was nobody else. I think that was the first place I ever saw a 9-year-old or a 7-year-old having a 2-year-old and a 3-year-old that he was looking after because their parents were no longer there and they had died. So it's like they become the head of the household at 7 years and 8 years, and they're kind of managing things. So it's very hard, and how other community members really pitch in and help them out. So that was the group. And then there were teenage girls and their teenage boys who really wanted to be involved and wanting to do something for their community and wanting to kind of really tell what they needed and how they needed it to us. So we did those focus groups. In this process, we also kind of started, again, about partnership, their needs. When we walked into the hospital, there's this community hospital that has been there for a year, and they're doing incredible work. Their catchment area is about 65,000 population right around there. But they had no electronic medical record system, nothing. So it was all in files and piles, pages and pages and paper and piled up in things. So one of the things that, like Ruth said, you find people you're sitting next to, and Ruth was kind of talking, and Jill was talking to somebody in the Einstein, and there were 2 medical students who were very interested in going to work there. She found the funding for them. They went there for a summer for about 6 weeks. They sat there, and they created a whole electronic record system for the hospital. Now everything is electronic, and when we kind of, they created it in Access, very, very simple, and they showed them how to kind of run their monthly reports or weekly reports and things like that. So they actually could follow their patients, and they've been managing it beautifully and working on it. So they trained people in the community to do that work as well. So that, those are the things that were not part of the pilot, but it became sort of the study, because we were also building a infrastructure and a research infrastructure for people to kind of continue the work that we went. And it was very important to train them to do it. Okay. And we also formed an IRB committee there from the community members and the government officials. Everybody participated from the community around it, and they have an IRB functioning now. So, thank you. So again, I cannot stress enough about having importance of having a person nurture the partnership. I think that's very important in both national and international collaborations, to kind of really have somebody who nurtures the collaboration. And the focus groups, like I said, there were five focus groups with community health workers, caregivers, teachers from schools, and youth groups of girls and boys. And we had, I led all the groups, and I also had a co-facilitator in the group who spoke Swahili from the community center, from St. Francis Hospital. So we were able to run the group well. Most of them spoke English, so it did not really have that much difficulty, other than some of the caregivers did not speak English that fluently, but they understood when I talked slowly, and that they were able to kind of give me responses back in English, but also in Swahili that were translated. So we kind of managed that way. The focus group guide focused on, of course, defining areas of concern regarding overall health, cultural acceptance and understanding of mental health symptoms, sociocultural factors contributing to the reproductive health and mental health issues among youth, identifying behaviors that place OVCs, youth at risk for contracting HIV, and attitudes towards focused mental health and HIV prevention program as to what they needed in the program, what components that they actually wanted programs. So what did we find? We found that the teachers really identified and focused on the lack of access of youth to information regarding sex and substance abuse. They talked about the importance of learning positive life skills training for them. The caregivers stressed the importance of parental involvement in the sex education, because they felt that most of the parents and the caregivers are kept out, and they're not able to really involve themselves in talking to youth about it, whatever limited information that there is. And also the importance of dealing with peer pressure for youth. That seemed to be something that resonated with youth as well. The community health workers identified the training needs that the community health workers needed to help the OVCs in the communities. They talked about the lack of psychosocial support training, the formal training resources. So they had a lot of informal training sessions and talking things, but there was no formal training or evaluation of the training programs before they went out to help somebody else. So it was like, if you wanted to help, you could be part of it and go help, but rather than really having resources or training to do it appropriately. And also they talked about lack of youth support and supervision at home in the community in general, that nobody's really looking out for them. And they wanted to create that support system in the community so that everybody's looking out for the kids and everybody's looking out for the youth to kind of help them develop more responsibly. And also they identified the need for mental health programs and access to HIV services for youth. It was problematic for youth and also for young adults in the community. And I'm talking about this community that has an HIV rate of anywhere between 7 to 14% within that community. Youth really, really focused and recognized the influence of social and peer pressure that they go through. They expressed need for self-esteem building and moral support. They identified lack of access to mental health programs on depression. They also talked about need for health education, avoiding risky behavior, and they had this immense desire for mentorship. And they kept on talking about loving homes. But when we really pressed on, what do you really mean by loving homes? It's not as if like their parents don't love them, but it was more about, we need our parents don't understand us to be able to talk to them. So for them, loving home meant that they wanted to sit down and really talk to their parents about the issues that are bothering them, and that wasn't happening in the house. So that's how they identified it. And based on those survey results, as you can see, we had those bags made for the kids as a reimbursement because they didn't want money. So we kind of gave out those bags. All the kids were so happy wearing those Coke bags and as part of the survey. So based on the focus groups, we created a survey that we kind of gave out to about 261 youth over two days. And the age group was 13 to 18 years. and about 57% were 13 to 15 year olds in that. And the paper and pen survey took about 20 minutes to complete, and all of them completed that. Now, what were the results that we found from the survey about mental health? So there were a lot of questions about mental health needs, resilience, social support, SDQ, etc. So the main questions that I found. About 62% reported feeling lonely some or most of the time in the group. About 20% had seriously considered attempting suicide in the last 12 months. And 23% overall, not out of that 20, but overall 23% reported making plans to attempt suicide. And 24% of the entire group out of 261 had attempted suicide one or six or more times in their lives already. And 27% reported emotional distress on a constant basis. 26% reported having conduct problems in school and in the community and at home. And 25% reported having peer social problems. On the SDQ, that's the strength and difficulties questionnaire, 21% of the youth scored borderline or at risk for developing a mental disorder. Now, about 18% was sexually experienced. They had their sexual encounter now. The first intercourse by the age 13, about 16% of kids reported that. And about 12% of the kids in the group reported two or more sexual partners. About 15% had used condom at their last sexual encounter, and about 4.6% had traded sex at some point for money or something that they wanted. In terms of substance abuse, about 27% reported using alcohol, and about 16% had started using it before the age 13. So in terms of drug use, it was 18%, and in the last 30 days, when asked about cigarette and tobacco used, about 10% reported using that regularly in the last 30 days. Now, about HIV knowledge, that was kind of surprising and sort of nicer also, that 77% knew how to avoid acquiring HIV infection. They did not have a lot of skills in negotiating sexual activities or negotiating sexual, encounters. But they didn't know how to avoid it. 77% knew how to recognize signs and symptoms of HIV. And 40% of youth were aware of effectiveness of condoms. 35% knew how to use condoms correctly. They said they did, but we did not really test them, like if they really did. And about 29% lacked refusal skills on saying that I do not want to have sex if you do not use condom to a partner. They did not have that. And 56% had been tested for HIV. Now, I have to say that in terms of substance use and drug and risky behavior, about 28% kids did not answer those questions. And that was because they wanted to be socially appropriate. So a lot of information that I'm sharing here is kind of, I think, the lower side of the numbers. It could have been much higher in terms of substance use, in terms of their sexual encounters. They were trying to be more socially appropriate, even though these were anonymous surveys. So in the end, at this point, we are going back in January. So we have designed a program, HIV prevention program and a mental health program, and we are going to do a trial run with our advisory group of youth there to kind of see what parts they like and what activities they like to include in the program. So that'll be something that probably we'll discuss next year. So that's where we are in the program. At this point, what we find that there's a demonstrated need to address the mental health and HIV prevention issues for Nairobi OVCs. And it's very, very important to integrate the community wisdom in any programs that you make. And it's with the empirical expertise that we have. So they can do the programs themselves, absolutely, but they can't show the efficacy. That's the part that we can do, and kind of how to have each component that can be more evaluated into the program and do the trainings to kind of do it consistently in the same way and create a manual, things like that. That's something that you need the academic expertise with. So that's how we kind of are building this together. And it's important for the community members like parents, to involve parents and the caregivers and the teachers and everybody else in this, for the sustainability of the program in that community. So that when I'm gone, my grant funding runs out. When I'm gone, they're still there to do it. They don't need me anymore. I create the program, I show them how to evaluate it, and I show them how to do it. They can continue and evolve it and include more things as they need it, because they have been part of the whole process, all right. So they've seen it, they've learned it, they are working towards it. And that's where we are. Thank you. And that's our youth advisory group, and I promise them that I'll put up their pictures. So here they are. We're going to be working with us. Thank you.